Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
Today's word on the future, together. Because the future of business isn't driven by what machines or people do alone, but by all they can achieve together. See how we can help at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. This is Mike. Lauren is out this week, but we've got a special guest, and we're going to be talking all about Apple, so stick around. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired. Lauren Good is out reporting this week, but I am pleased to say that I am joined here in the room by Wired Reviews editor Julian Chokatu. Julian, hello.
Hello. It is very nice to be here face to face.
Sharing the same air.
Yes.
Well, it's great to have you here. And here in California, it is quite warm.
Yes, I came perfectly during a heat wave. I love it.
So we're recording this on Wednesday, the afternoon of September 7th. Just a few hours ago, Apple announced its new iPhone lineup, just like it does every September. Apple also announced a new rugged Apple Watch called the Ultra, along with the regular Apple Watches that we were expecting. Julian, I want to get right into it because you were there in person at Apple headquarters in Cupertino, but it was 97 degrees in Cupertino today. Is that right?
Yes. Well, it was going up to there. Thankfully, the Steve Jobs Theater is quite cool. It's underground. So thankfully, it was not too hot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the event was pretty much exactly like the event back in 2019. It felt the same pre-pandemic. We had to send in a COVID test the day before and upload that, and some company certified that, but no one had to wear a mask. It was all optional. Mm. Some people did, but obviously, like I would say, 90% of people did not wear masks. And it was, sitting next to 100 other people in the theater and watching Tim Cook take the stage. But this is where things differed. Instead of an actual live event like what maybe a lot of people thought might be happening finally, it was all pre-recorded. So Tim Cook physically did come on stage for the first minute, and then he cued the screen, and just like WWDC, we were all in a theater watching a movie, basically.
A big 90-minute infomercial.
Pretty much. A little weird. I know that, it was popular, but I also feel like it would have been great if I flew in here that there was, going to be an actual normal, typical Apple event. But right. I don't know if that's ever going to come back at this point. It seems like they are very happy with how pre-recording tapes go. And I guess it's way less work for their part in terms of rehearsals or anything like that. So it seems like, pre-recorded Apple events are going to be the future.
And it is kind of creepy to watch those pre-recorded videos because all of the narration is voiceover, and they're zooming in on people standing in the middle of the mountains or people on busy subway trains, and their voice sounds absolutely perfect. And the lip syncing is eerily perfect. Everything about it is so clean. It really makes me miss the sort of unexpected factor that comes with a live event.
Yeah, there's no awkward gaffes. There's no, you know, weird mistakes or anything like that. It's so clean, so perfect, very automated. You know, I guess that is what Apple has kind of been known for, and I guess that's kind of good for them. But yeah, it's definitely not as fun as physically seeing people show up on stage and seeing what they have to say.
We should talk about the iPhones first, because we were all expecting the Apple Watch Ultra to really steal the show today. But the iPhone 14 Pro had some great features that were also pretty impressive.
Yes. So the biggest crazy feature on the iPhone 14 Pro is that the notch, the infamous iPhone notch, which started with the iPhone 10, is finally gone. Now, like most Android phones, I will have to say, there is a hole punch cutout or a little pill-shaped thing that sits at the top center of the display. And that's where the Face ID camera is housed. Basically, it's a lot slimmer, takes up so much less space on the iPhone compared to like a notch. But Apple is doing some unique things with it. It's called the Dynamic Island. Is that what it was called? Yes. It's confusing for me because I have a coffee shop next to my apartment back in Brooklyn called Trash Island, and that's all I think about when I hear Dynamic Island. So
I think about Fantasy Island.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's just a strange name, but I guess they're not wrong. It is an island in a sea of a display. There is a camera there. But what they're doing is they are optimizing the area around the camera to make it more useful when you're doing sort of passive things. So for example, if you start playing some music, now you'll see like a now playing kind of album art with some, the squiggly line for the music that's going through show up right on that little pill. And let's say if you started a timer at the same time, now you'll see a little second circle showing up next to the pill that shows the timer. So that way in any app that you're in, you can quickly see that information. So also same thing for if you get a phone call and you switch, go away from the phone call screen, you can basically see, press and hold that little dynamic island area, and it'll sort of expand to show you more call controls and things like that. Honestly, I think it's a smart idea. It looks amazing and it feels very fluid, way better than a notch that kind of used to just take up a lot of space for not much of a reason other than, you know, Face ID, but it was kind of dead space. But now they've kind of taken that around and made it very useful. So I really liked that. And also with the iPhone 14 Pro, similarly with the display, it's now a always-on display, which I will say Android phones have had for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's nice to not have to, I guess, tap your phone and see the notifications or the time. You can always see it. And of course, if you don't want that, then you can turn it off or not have it turned on. So
earlier today, when we were watching the presentation in the office and reporting on it, somebody in the office asked me, like, what does always on display mean? And I pulled out my Pixel to show them.
Yes. Yeah. It has been a long time. And it's one of those things that you're just like, that's a weird headline feature for 2022. But cool. You know, awesome to see Apple finally get on board with it.
I really do think that the Dynamic Island is something that's going to move the needle across all different phones. Like, I think you'll see more phones doing that now because it's very creative thinking.
Yes.
You know, like you said, taking this area of the screen that has just been a dead zone and turning it into something that's actually kind of fun and interesting and useful.
Yeah. I mean, the most we've seen on the Android side is some companies have a little light that goes around the little cutout so that you can indicate it when you're taking a video selfie or taking a photo. It sort of just lights up that circle so that you know where to look, basically. But no one has ever done something like this where it's actually way more than that and adding a lot more utility. So really cool.
It also stands, I think, in pretty stark contrast to a lot of the things that other phone manufacturers have been doing around notifications, you know, like putting notifications on the back of the phone, making LEDs light up around the outside of the phone.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think this is definitely one of the best iterations and versions of that we've seen. And I'm waiting for someone else to start copying that and doing the same exact thing on the Android side.
Well, when's the next Samsung event?
4 months.
Did I just say that out loud? So I do want to talk about the cameras, especially on the Pro, because one of the things that Apple claimed for the iPhone 14 Pro is that its camera now has a crazy big sensor that enables it to have twice the performance for low light photos and
yeah,
a lot of other stats that they named about, you know, what's improved. But the low light photos was the thing that really jumped out at me.
Right. I mean, that is something that I will have to take some time to unpack because they basically called it a photonic engine. I have zero clue what that means. I believe it's like just a restructuring of how they do image processing. And basically, they're saying 2 times better low light performance for all the cameras. And in general, with the hardware and software combined, you can expect much better, brighter, sharper photos.
Yeah, yeah.
But with the iPhone 14 Pro, for the first time ever, the primary camera is no longer a 12 megapixel sensor. Mm-hmm. So for the first time now, it's a 48 megapixel sensor, which again, I will say that a lot of Android phones have multi-megapixel cameras. Having more megapixels doesn't always mean that you're going to get a better photo, but, you know, it's Apple, and I would assume that they've leveraged the bigger sensor, the more megapixels to deliver nicer, sharper images.
Yeah.
They are doing what all the other Android phone makers are doing, which is a feature called pixel binning.
Mm.
And basically what that means is they're merging the pixels so that they can absorb more light, and then you'll still end up with a 12 megapixel image. So your file sizes might be a little bigger, but they should be quite similar to what you've already experienced. But they did say that if you go into Pro RAW mode and shoot in that mode for you know, more control over your images, you can actually shoot in the complete 48 megapixel mode and get like the super high fidelity images that you probably want. So there's options, but basically it was just one of those things where you really have to just sit and use it and see what it's like to see how much better it is than the predecessors.
Right. And we should note that the phones are coming out later this month.
Yes. So I believe you can pre-order them all starting on Friday. Weirdly, all of the phones are going to be available officially on September 16th, except for the iPhone 14 Plus, which is another thing that maybe we should quickly mention is that, yeah, there's no iPhone 14 mini. There is just an iPhone 14 Plus. And I assume that's because the iPhone 14 or the iPhone 13 mini and the iPhone 12 mini were just not popular and people want big screens. So now there's an iPhone 14 Plus. And it's 6.7 inches, just like the iPhone 14 Pro Max.
Yeah.
It's all very confusing now.
Yeah.
There's just like way too many different names. But that one is going to be available on October 7th. So it's coming a little later. I assume there's some supply chain constraints or something. But I mean, I will say, though, that the iPhone 14 versus the iPhone 14 Pro, you know, there's almost very little that's new in the iPhone 14. So if you were looking to upgrade from an iPhone 13, absolutely do not do that. I think it's using the same chip as last year, except, you know, with an extra graphics core or something. So it's a little more powerful, but pretty much the same phone as last year's iPhone 13, I'd say, with some improvements to the camera.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to unpack the rest of Apple's announcements.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
All right, I think we've said about all the interesting things that there is to say about the phones. So let's talk about the watches. You got to wear the watches at the hands-on area after the event.
Yes.
You got to strap them onto your wrist and hold them.
Yes.
Look at them closely. What stood out to you?
Well, can I start by saying that nothing about the Series 8 stood out to me? I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a great Apple Watch for most people, and everyone, if you want to upgrade to that, then go ahead. But obviously the one that, you know, the thing we have to talk about is the Apple Watch Ultra, which was rumored to be called Apple Watch Pro, but of course we need a new name. You know, everything's pro nowadays. So
yeah,
Ultra is a huge watch. I believe it's 49 millimeters. So it's pretty big. I have larger wrists, so it felt fine to me. The Alpine strap is really nice, very soft and thin, and it was almost like putting on a little shirt. It was really nice. And it didn't feel too heavy or bulky. Really like the fact that the entire edge of the smartwatch is protected by the titanium case. And so there's no worry of, like, you know, if you accidentally hit your wrist on a wall that you kind of scratch the screen or something like that. And, you know, it's just like the most rugged thing ever. It's super protective, very strong. It has super accurate GPS. It has better diving, you know, water resistance. So you can take it to up to 40 meters, I believe. All of these features that are clearly meant for the most active people on the planet, which, you know, unfortunately, my fear is that, you know, everyone's going to want the Apple Watch Ultra because it's just cool and different.
Yeah, probably.
You absolutely should not get it, though, because it's $799 and it's expensive. Obviously, the killer feature here on this is the fact that they're claiming 36-hour battery life, and Apple, you know, the Apple Watch generally has had poor battery life. So I think a lot of people will flock to this just to be able to have better battery life, although they did introduce a new low power mode, which will increase the standard Apple Watch Series 8's battery to 36 hours while disabling certain key features like auto workout detection. But the Apple Watch Ultra standard battery life is 36 hours, according to them. So I think a lot of people just will upgrade to that for the mere fact that they can have an Apple Watch that they don't have to charge every day.
Yeah. We should note that when the next version of watchOS comes out, that low power mode that extends the battery life will also go back to older watches, I think up to Series 4 and later, Series 5 and later.
Right. Yeah. So you don't have to upgrade if you want that extra feature.
Yeah.
Honestly, it is kind of weird that they haven't had some type of a low power mode until now. But
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the battery life is still a pretty big deal, I think, because like 36 hours is good for like an all day hike or maybe an overnight camping trip, like a one overnight camping trip. And even if you put the Ultra into low power mode to get the 60 hours, that's still like less than 3 days.
Right. And, you know, obviously, you know, Adrian, so our colleague, constantly talks about how Garmins can last for weeks, if not more. So, yeah, they still aren't really capturing a particular type of audience that just wants a watch that can last for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But this is a step forward. You know, it does suck that you have to spend this much and also have to get such a huge thing to be able to last that long. But hopefully that means that next year we'll see some type of improvement that comes down to the standard Apple Watch, that maybe the battery life for that one will be 2 days.
Yeah. You have to switch wrists every other day if you buy an Apple Watch Ultra so that your one arm doesn't end up bigger than
exactly.
The other. I mean, it is a step forward. It's also a step in a new category because the price of it, $799, that puts it into what the smartwatch world calls the premium smartwatch category.
Right.
And Apple dominates the sub $500 smartwatch category. They own something like 36% of the market share there. But when you get into premium, the main brand is Garmin, because Garmin sells a lot of watches between $500 and $1,000.
Right.
So Apple Watch Ultra is going to start competing for that space and may very well dominate that space and relegate Garmin to second place there. But I think it's important to note that, like, you know, they're going after this category of watches that have all of these crazy capabilities. But those watches that Apple's competing against, they're not Apple watches. They don't have the nice UX. They don't run apps.
Right. And I think that's where they're going to maybe win out at the end. You know, better connectivity with the iPhone, more seamlessness, better user interface. All of that stuff, I think, is definitely going to contribute to a lot of people maybe not caring about that their Garmin can last for a whole another week than the Apple Watch Ultra, but it just looks nicer. It looks better. And they'll just go for that.
Love the bright orange.
Yeah. It really does look nice. I love like the sort of flat sides to it. The overall design in general looks really attractive, but it's just, you know, it's the same price as an iPhone 14.
Yeah, and, exactly the same price as an iPhone.
It's just kind of nuts.
I mean, you know, you know how it is.
Yeah.
If you want it, you're going to buy it.
I know.
No matter who you are.
Yes. I mean, I am happy that I will have no urge to buy it because I am nothing like Adrian, our colleague.
Right.
I'm not going on 3-day hikes or anything like that.
Or 5-day hikes.
Or 5-day hikes.
Or dives in the ocean.
I'm
or you don't own a boat.
No. I just scooter around New York. And that's the most I do. So, but I'm sure I will see tons of people in New York with an Apple Watch Ultra.
Absolutely. So. And here in the land of all birds, we will see a lot of them.
Yes.
I know that for sure. I'll see a lot of them on my daily runs. That's for sure. But no, the orange is such a great move because it, you know, not only is it nice to have something that's brightly colored in the outdoors, you know, just because when you're covered in snow or when you're underwater, it really pops.
Yeah.
But also it's just so badass.
Yeah. Also the feature that you can switch the display to go into that red color so that it's easier visibility. All you have to do is it only works with the Wayfinder watch face at the moment. So you have use that, but you just scroll the crown down and it just switches to that mode and everything looks, well, it's supposed to make it look easier to read in certain conditions.
And it doesn't blow your night vision.
Yes.
So like if your eyes have adjusted to the dark, looking at a red light is fine.
Right.
It won't make you have to readjust.
Yes. It just looks very slick and it was very nice. I mean, it's just it's a really nice watch. And I just wish Apple had brought some of that stuff over into the Series 8 to make that watch feel a little more distinct.
The Series 8 does have a cool new back case that matches the color of the front. Is that right?
I have no idea. That's how little I basically, I just, you know, threw that out of my mind. Apple Watch Ultra, I focused on that. I will say, you know, the Series 8 does have new features, like car crash detection was another big thing. That was another big theme throughout the event. Car crash detection.
They scared the shit out of everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I will say that, you know, the whole theme of the event was supposed to be far out. The invites had these celestial, you know, galaxies and stars all over. I was hoping for some type of like stargazing type feature
or astrophotography, like
astrophotography mode. Yeah. No, it's just you're stuck in the middle of nowhere and that's what all of Apple's new gadgets will help you with, which great, but I don't think it fit the theme of far out, at least what I was thinking of.
I thought it was, after watching the presentation, I thought it was like you can go far out. Like you can go on these extreme adventures now.
Yeah, right. But, you know, the whole star thing just threw me off. I don't like it.
We'll have to have a word with Apple marketing about all of this. All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time left, but should we talk about AirPods Pro? Is there anything interesting to say about those?
Yes and no, mostly no. It is a new chip and it sounds better in terms of active noise cancellation. That was definitely improved. It's hard to say exactly how much without like having put them side by side, but you know, it did a pretty good job of silencing a lot of people around me when I was there. But honestly, there's like 6 hours of listening time is the battery life claim that they're saying. That should have been way higher, in my opinion, because most earbuds these days can get up to 9, sometimes even more. So for Apple to just bump it up slightly is kind of a weird move after several years of not having an AirPods Pro. So overall, I thought that was kind of like a weaker update. But I mean, it's still the AirPods Pro. They're like still pretty good. They're very easy to pair with and, you know, they're pretty feature rich and nice if you have other Apple products. So I'm sure it'll sell just as well.
Solid.
Yeah.
You can charge it on an Apple Watch puck now too.
Yes.
Have you been able to do that or is that?
I believe that's new.
Yeah.
There's also a speaker in the case now so that if you ever lose the case, you know, it beeps very loudly. I think getting lost is just the whole theme of this event. losing your case somewhere, losing yourself somewhere.
Yeah, you know, if you're not careful, you may end up drifting all the way to Dynamic Island.
Oh, yes. God. Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, that's good.
There will be two people standing on the beach in white suits welcoming you to Dynamic Island. I just can't get over it. All right, well, let's take another break. And when we come back, we'll do our recommendations.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine. Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Julian, you've been on the show a bunch of times. You know the routine. You're our guest. You have to give us a recommendation. Tell the people a thing that they might enjoy.
Okay, well, I think a portable display is something that might be worthwhile, especially if you're someone who is hybrid working, like if you are sometimes going into the office and sometimes working from home, which I think a lot of people are in that weird state right now, since a lot of companies are potentially mandating returning to the office and some of them are just not. So portable displays is basically just exactly what it sounds like. It's like a monitor, but without the stand. You do get a little case sometimes that to keep it propped up, or you can get your own little kickstand. And they plug with one single USB-C cable into your laptop, and voila, you have a second screen to take with you wherever. They're quite thin usually, so it's not too hard to just stuff it next to your laptop in your backpack. And I like it because I have grown way too accustomed to having multiple screens to work with at home. And so
you do have a strong screen game.
I do. I have an ultra wide and like a vertical monitor to my left. And that just gives me all the screen space I need for everything at once. And suddenly going on the road and just working off of a tiny laptop screen is just not cutting it out for me.
I'm spoiled.
So now I just hook up. I mean, I look like a douche, I will say. Like, I literally go to a coffee shop and I take out my little portable display and stick it next to my laptop. So I look like maybe someone from back in the day who would bring their whole desktop computer to a coffee shop or something like that.
Sure.
But it's nice. I think they're pretty lightweight. They're getting better and nicer looking and sharper. And if you are someone who just likes seeing all of your stuff in multiple different screens, and I think generally second screens like exponentially increase your workflow output and just makes everything easier. So I strongly recommend. I guess if you want a specific recommendation, you can go to our work from home gear guide on wired.com. I am currently using the Espresso display. I don't know why it's called Espresso, but it's one of the thinnest in the world, one of the thinnest displays in the world. And it's very lightweight. And it is pricey, though. It's about $4.99.
$4.99. Are there cheaper ones?
There are a lot cheaper ones. Yeah, there's I don't know how to say the brand name. I keep forgetting, but it's Innocn, I-N-N-O-C-N.
Yeah.
I've tried a couple of their portable displays.
It's like Innocent. It's like Innocent with a silent T.
Yes. And they have some very affordable displays, OLEDs even. And yeah, I mean, I think any type of screen, it doesn't have to be amazing. It just lets you put a lot of your windows into a different area and lets you multitask.
Nice.
Yeah. What's your recommendation?
I'm going to recommend that, like, maybe don't buy a new phone this year.
That's, you know, totally, totally valid advice.
Yeah. Like, we were talking about this earlier during the presentation. You know, Apple always shows all these slides about how environmentally responsible they are and how they're doing their best to, you know, they don't put chargers in the box anymore. They have minimal packaging now. They've stepped up their use of recycled materials. But every device that you have, like an iPhone or an Android phone or a Pixel phone or an Apple Watch or a Garmin watch, no matter what it is, it's going to be using rare earth minerals that are mined. It's going to be using a lot of materials that cannot be and are never recycled. So you're still like not doing the planet any favors by adhering to this upgrade cycle that all of the big tech companies are encouraging us to stick with, right? Like, there are people who go out and buy a new iPhone every year.
Right.
You don't need to do that.
No.
I mean, even if you're paranoid about having last year's camera, it's still like you're not really getting as much benefit out of the new camera as you might think you are.
Right.
I mean, maybe you are. I don't know. Maybe you're like a professional videographer or something.
Right. But that's like the outlier, right? Like most yeah. people are just posting to Instagram. And honestly, you're probably not going to notice a difference from last year's iPhone or this year's iPhone.
Yeah. Your camera's not going to make you hotter. Just get a ring light. But yeah, like obviously, if you know if you need a new phone, right? And right. if you're missing out on key security features, like if your phone is not supported anymore, or if you're still stuck with a phone that doesn't have really good biometric authentication or whatever, or if your battery only lasts 3 hours, then yeah, get a new phone. But use your phone until you reach that point is what I'm saying.
Right.
So, you know, it's days like today where we all feel that like burning desire to buy the new thing. Right. And I'm saying just throw a glass of water on that. Think about the environment and think about how much stuff you buy in general all the time. And our recommendations are often like, hey, buy a thing. So I'm saying, you know, maybe take the money that you would have spent on an iPhone and buy something else that's not going to hurt the environment.
Sure. Or, you know, nothing.
Or nothing.
I mean, I'm proud of our social media editor, Alicia. She still rocks iPhone 8 Plus.
Oh, yes. The fingerprint sensor.
Yes. And she was there at our event and it was working fine, you know, flawlessly. So yeah. that is a like, what, 4 or 5 year old phone. And yeah, so definitely don't have to upgrade if your phone is working in perfectly fine right now.
But also Alicia might be a bad example because she shoots TikToks for a living and she's like, I am absolutely getting the new iPhone.
That's true. Well, I mean, completely valid for her. She's due an upgrade.
All right. So I'll say if you're on the fence and if you're one of those people who always comes up to me at parties and says, should I get the new iPhone? My answer is like, eh, probably not.
Yeah.
Sorry, but probably not. Like the one you have is probably fine. And if it's not, you know, and just buy a new one.
Right.
And then use that for 5 years, maybe 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Apple supports the devices for a long time. So yeah. 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
They're committed to keeping old iPhones in circulation. So honor that.
Yeah, exactly. Good advice. Good job.
Thanks. And then buy a portable display.
Whoops.
Well, that's all the time we have. Julian, thank you for braving the beautiful California weather.
Wonderful weather. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And for joining us. It's going to cool off as soon as you fly home. I know it.
I know it. Yes, of course. Yeah, my partner was saying that it was 70 degrees in New York. And I'm like, how is that possible that New York has better weather right now than San Francisco?
It's called climate change.
I know.
Because we buy too many phones.
It's depressing.
Well, thank you all for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. Our producer is Boone Ashworth. We will be back next week. Until then, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.